We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I am your host, and as always, the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Like the delayed luggage of news, we are coming to you roughly 20 days late and yet still full of things that you need. In the spirit of the current living crisis, we are partnering with National Food Bank Day, normally a day to encourage people to think about and contribute to your local food bank. But with the shift in social economic power in this past few, we'll say decades, this day has actually shifted to be all about being a somber reminder of the failure of the capitalist system that these things even need to exist. And the increasing reliance on them in place of support systems is a blight on any nation who would let people go cold and hungry. And in the truest way we can, we celebrate in the traditional way by not acknowledging it on the day that it happened, but rather giving it a passing acknowledgement sort of down the road. We're also partnering with International Red Panda Day. Yes, lighten your mood a little bit on this special day to celebrate the animal that, while it is red, is definitely not in the panda family. As part of the order of Carnivora, they're probably most closely related to a group that includes skunks, raccoons, and weasels. Now, given that they are not in the panda family, maybe it's time to give them a new name. Some names that they do already go by are the bearcat, the fire fox, and the Himalayan raccoon, and those are pretty fun names. But we got a few suggestions, including the elusive mountain weasel, the stinkless skunk, the recluse snow ginger, the only native ginger in India, and look, given that most of us will only ever encounter a red panda at a zoo, maybe we can call them the red, I can't see it, mum, I can't see it, mum, where is it, mum, where is it, or just for short, the ginger ninja. And of course, finally, we are partnering with World Ampersand Day. We celebrate this in the only way that we can, by including it at the end of a long list introduced by an ampersand. Of course, I am on the road at the moment. I'm currently in Sydney for the Sydney Fringe Festival. If you happen to be in Sydney or know anyone in Sydney, do send them out to check out one of the last few shows that I've got this festival. I'm doing Wage Against the Machine, my storytelling and stand-up show that is all about dodgy jobs that I used to work, the $20,000 robo-debt that I received, and the time that I broke a 100-year-old roller coaster. I've only got a couple more shows here in Sydney, and then there's a little gap, and we'll be going to Wynnum Fringe. If you don't know where Wynnum is, it is in Queensland, so that'll be towards the end of November. I don't think there'll be any more fringes or major festivals or anything like that before or after that one. I think Wynnum will be it for the end of the year, but I will be touring as extensively as I can in 2024, so keep an ear out and I'll keep you updated with dates. We will be touring Wage Against the Machine to as many places as I can. But of course, that brings us to the end of this week's partnerships and promotions. Let's get into the headlines. I am Matt Harvey, and I will be the bearer of weird news. Onto the headlines. Elon Musk has rebranded Twitter, replacing Twitter's iconic blue bird with a new X logo on the path to create his one and only idea, the Everything app. Ah, yes, the classic modern problem-solving solution. Just rebrand it. House on fire? Not anymore. It's rebranded as a heat-abundant domicile. You aren't drowning. No, you're just lucky to be enjoying an excess of liquid. You aren't starving. No, no. You're experiencing a rapid onset of weight loss. You'll look fantastic for the summer. Speaking of Twitter, Anas Haqqani, a senior leader of the Taliban, has praised Twitter in response to the launch of Threads, giving Twitter the coveted Taliban bump, an impossible-to-buy endorsement given to only the loosest content moderators in town. The group thinks Meta's content policy, which includes a ban on support or praise for terrorist or hate groups, is intolerant, failing to realize that Meta never actually planned to follow through on the policy. It's like when Google had "Don't be evil" in its code of conduct. Look, they never actually planned to abide by it and will remove it when nobody's paying attention. But it sure did look good on paper, didn't it? McDonald's in Indonesia has started offering a $230 wedding package, which offers to provide hundreds of chicken burgers and 100 packages of McNuggets containing 4 pieces. Hang on. 4 nuggets? 4 nuggets? McDonald's does 6 nuggets. That's the number, right? I know that we're all starving ourselves to fit into our wedding clothes, but this is a travesty. Where are my extra nuggets, McDonald's? Where are my extra nuggets? Look, I did the research. Even a Happy Meal gets 6 nuggets, and they don't have to listen to Tracy bang on about how she'll never find love for 6 hours or so. And I don't even get 6 nuggets for doing that? I call that an unhappy meal. However, for an extra cost, you can even get one of the iconic McDonaldland figures to officiate, which is kind of fun. The Hamburglar has been going through a bit of a redemption arc recently and is keen for a chance to make it up to society. But for anything less than $1,000, I'm sorry, you'll be stuck with Grimace. He's a bit of a loose unit. Who knows how that'll go? A woman on a plane recently told the flight crew that she had security concerns about a man after seeing him acting suspiciously, writing in a foreign script. Security was immediately suspicious, not because of the foreign language, but because who writes things in a notepad anymore? Fucking get a laptop, nerd. Turns out the woman was sitting next to the Ivy League economist Guido Menzio, who was working on equations on price setting. When asked later, the woman said she knew it was maths, but his calculation style was amateurish at best, and she'd not be able to abide his sloppy calculations for the duration of the flight. And it's not at all that she was embarrassed and projecting. That flight eventually took off more than 2 hours after its scheduled departure, prompting Qantas customers to consider trying the same route, as a 2-hour delay is pretty good compared to most Qantas flights these days. Switzerland has returned to Egypt a fragment of a statue of the pharaoh Ramesses II that is more than 3,400 years old. Egypt said that, you know, they were kind of happy to do a bit of a cultural trade, but weirdly, Switzerland wasn't willing to give up some of their cultural treasures. They said technically Nazi gold doesn't actually belong to them either, but nobody can really figure out who it belongs to, so it's a bit best to just sort of keep it stored away, you know, just in case. Egypt has entered into a sort of an interesting strategy so far. Every time somebody makes the argument to keep a relic from an ancient Egyptian, Egypt willingly offers up the mummified remains of former dictator Hosni Mubarak, but weirdly, nobody has taken up the offer yet. Unilever, the makers of both Cornetto and Lynx, have defended their decision to stay operating in Russia, allegedly contributing £579 million to the Russian economy annually. And that's just the amount of Lynx Africa that Vladimir Putin puts on in a year. He really likes those ads with the ladies in them because they make him feel really manly while he rides his horsey. Scientists have managed to reanimate worms that were frozen for an estimated 46,000 years and immediately started having babies. Upon hearing the news, the coalition started proceedings to get them shipped to Australia and naturalized, as they are a rapidly growing voter base whose mindset is just old enough to align with their party values. And that's the end of the headlines. Let's get into the bigger news. First up, climate news. As with many of our social media feeds, some of you may have seen some people taking part in Dry July this year. The Earth is no exception. Dry July was a particularly dry one this year, as the Earth has entered its villain phase. It's getting a real smoky eye and hot mess vibes happening all over the place. In response, UN Secretary General and previous winner of Ominous Quotes magazine's Mouth of the Month for his ominous warnings on climate change, when he warned, it's either a climate solidarity pact or a collective suicide pact, Antonio Guterres is back with yet another hot contender for the title of Mouth of the Month, as he announces, the era of global warming has ended. The era of global boiling has arrived. The air is unbreathable, the heat is unbearable, and the level of fossil fuel profits and climate inaction is unacceptable. The Earth's eras have been easy to track so far. 20 years ago, it was global this is fine meme. Then we entered into global warming. Now the era of global warming has ended, and the era of global boiling has begun. So the next phases that we can expect are global frog in a pot, global fanning ourselves constantly, global discomfort, then global walking around without pants regardless of who's in the house, followed quickly by global ouchies, quickly followed by global, well, I can't take off my skin, and then finally the era of global cleanse it with fire and start over with a species a little more concerned about its own survival. So some fun things for us to look forward to there. I mean, fuck me, who is this guy's speechwriter? The Swamp of Sadness? I suppose he's in the right job, right? If you have a flair for the dramatic, you might as well work in the climate field. When shit starts going right, this guy's gonna lose his job. He kind of feels like more of a wartime leader. You know, you don't need a wartime leader in times of peace, but for now, he's the perfect man for the job. Tell you what though, Greta's gonna be pissed. We already stole her future, now we are boiling it alive? All this terrible climate news. And Australia has a brand spanking new climate conscious government, which must obviously be leaping right into action. Right? Right? Surely. After all, in his first speech as Prime Minister-elect, Albanese declared he wanted to unite the country to end the climate wars and take advantage of the opportunity to turn Australia into a renewable energy superpower. So what exciting, positive climate news do we have? Let's have a little look-see here. Oh, right. Turns out, Australia is being criticised for siding with China and Russia to oppose a popular plan from a group of Pacific Island nations to tackle carbon emissions from the shipping industry. Well, traditionally, the way you end a war is to destroy the opposition. And if the Pacific nations are against our way of life, in this case, recklessly digging coal from the ground and selling it, then we are in a secret war with them. Sure, we haven't declared war, but to be honest, we fought war in the Middle East for 20 years without declaring it, even claiming to be peacekeepers. So I find a formal declaration of war to be incidental to the act of going to war in this day and age. And we can win this one without shooting a single shot. Just keep selling coal and harness nature to destroy our enemies. Thus, the climate war will end, and the promise will be kept. Opposition to the proposal has hardened among a group of about 20 nations. Well, who are these renegades of common thought? These brave countries willing to stand up to big climate change and big Pacifica and big responsibility. Let's have a little look, see, shall we? Seems the countries include China, Russia, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, and of course, Australia. Ah, now there's a group of respectable climate-conscious countries, if ever I saw one. I believe the band name for this powerhouse of nations is the Monsters of Modern History. This is our first official tour with the Monsters of Modern History, but we have been courting a membership for many years. It's pretty exciting to get it. Championed by Pacific Island nations, including Solomon Islands and Marshall Islands, this is considered an ambitious proposal that would introduce a $100 per ton levy on maritime emissions in order to make cleaner fuels cost competitive with the dirtier heavy fuel oil that is the industry standard. I mean, if they wanted to truly make them cost competitive instead of imposing a fine, they could just stop providing the companies with tax subsidies. Are we safe? Yep, well, doesn't look like there's any snipers. You know, I didn't think I'd survive that suggestion. Maybe they have stopped assassinating the outspoken. They seem to have found a more effective way to flaunt their power. Just slowly burn them to death. Look here. Woodside Energy has threatened to sue individual activists for financial damages, claiming to have suffered in a recent protest where climate protesters set off a stink bomb made from non-toxic and non-flammable gas inside the company's headquarters in Perth. Aww, diddums, did the big bad protesters make you feel bad because your building got all stinky? Did they make a huge mess of something and then leave it for you to clean up? Well, isn't that just the worst kind of behavior? What kind of undignified monsters would come to a place, wreck it up for their own reasons, and then leave without considering the consequences? Woodside says it was forced to evacuate its headquarters as a result of the protest, which was designed to mimic the smell of a gas leak. Woodside's lawyers have since written to two activists claiming the company should be compensated by individual activists for financial damages that the stink bomb caused. The letter, which was obtained by the ABC, contained a demand that the activists identify all other individuals involved in the protest, which Woodside may want to use as a potential future lawsuit. And it seems like they're right to be scared, because independent Senator David Pocock has called for a duty of care to be set in Australian law that would require governments to consider the impact of climate harm on young people in their decision making. Now, keep in mind that this is just considering. So maybe some stronger wording would be necessary here if they wanted some significant change. Oh, sure, they considered the impact that they would have on future generations, and then they considered how much money they'd make, and they thought that was a stronger consideration. This is on the back of reports that a crucial system of ocean currents is currently heading for a collapse that would affect every person on the planet. So it seems it's not just the Pacific nations that we need to worry about going to war with. Looks like it's going to be all-out Mad Max on the water. So, Waterworld. Oh, man. Do we have to live in Waterworld? I don't want to live in Waterworld. That seems like a very terrible place to live. So, it seems like it's every nation for himself. We can't be considering the position of support for Pacific nations. Sorry. Sorry, guys. As beautiful as they are, and we will miss the culture and the coconuts, we can't save the Pacific Islands for two reasons, right? As Australians, we cannot do that for two reasons. Number one, our second greatest shame currently exists on the Pacific Islands of Manus and Nauru. And we need people to forget, you understand? We can't just have that sitting around. They only put up with our jovial sports-washed nation for so long before history will catch up with us. So if we bury it all under the sea, like the lost city of Atlantis, we can call it like the lost prison of Australia, and we can deny it ever existed. And number two, the second reason that we can't abide by saving the Pacific nations. We are fucking up our own beautiful island nations. And quite frankly, you guys are not. We need less competition for tourism. Sorry guys, that's you. That's all of you. People don't destination wedding in Australia. They go to Fiji. They go to Bali. These places are much more beautiful than our island home. So I'm sorry, if we're choosing between you and us, it's gonna be us. Moving on now to Indigenous news. Before we do this segment, I'd just like to take a moment to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this news was created, the Murdoch Empire. I would also like to pay my respects to elders past and present. We acknowledge them for their rich history of making up stories that make this country what it is today, a terrible place. Okay, now that that is out of the way, what's been happening with the actual Indigenous communities? Any large stories or moments of significant change coming up? Anything that anyone can think of? Oh, what's this? What do we have here? Seems the federal court has rejected Aboriginal elder Dennis Fisher's bid to access age pension early due to the life expectancy gap. See, he wanted to access his pension at the age of 64 instead of at 67, and quite frankly, this is genius and should be an interesting read. So, now for those international listeners, and let's be honest, for those national listeners who don't know, Indigenous Australians have shorter life expectancies and, according to the federal court themselves, encounter unacceptable differences in health. So, if I'm honest, this sounds like a bit of a slam dunk. So, what did the court decide? Apparently, despite their own estimation, living in unacceptable differences in health, this does not entitle them to receive the age pension earlier than others. Why would it? That would be unfair on everyone else. Imagine living a life where one portion of society was forced to live a life that was less advantageous than their contemporaries through no process that they can control. It'd be madness. So what were the arguments? Maybe his lawyers just did a bad job. You never know. Well, Fisher's lawyers relied on Australian Bureau of Statistics figures that showed if Indigenous males reached the age of 65, they lived on average for a further 15.8 years. In contrast, 65-year-old non-Indigenous males had an average life expectancy of an extra 19 years. So a difference here of around 3 years. Okay, so here's the thing. I see the problem. His first mistake was bringing statistics to an ongoing culture war. And I get it. The court seems like a place for facts, but the court is where a lot of Indigenous people get let down. The courts and the streets and their jobs and within their communities. It's an important part of the prison pipeline after all. I mean, what were the judges thinking? Surely they can see the logic behind the argument. They argue the age pension was not designed to provide support for a specific number of years or to pay out a certain amount of money. Instead, it was meant to prevent people from falling into poverty during old age. And all that's true, but it's not what he's arguing, is it? Not really. He's saying that the equivalent lifespan would be about 3 years earlier. So you'd be spending the same amount of money, but just a little bit earlier. I mean, they'll still die statistically early if that's what you're worried about. There will be no advantage gained. In a statement after the judgment was delivered, Dennis said he was frustrated with this white system. It's not a system of the land. It doesn't give us a say. Well, maybe it's time for a systemic change, a large dynamic shift, some kind of voice. What a unique prospect.
The Prime Minister will promise to hold the referendum for an Indigenous voice to Parliament this year.
What? This year? Amazing. What good timing. Well, why don't we just look into that?
The voice will be a body representing Indigenous people chosen by Indigenous people. The actual technical term used in the constitutional change is representations. They would make representations to the government and Parliament on how particular laws or policies would affect them, or about how laws and policies should be crafted so as to accommodate their needs and their customs and their laws.
Unsurprisingly, Peter Dutton has become one of the key figures in the No campaign against The Voice. A former Queensland cop against something that will positively benefit the lives of Indigenous people? I can't think of why that'd be. Police are famously excellent in their relationship with the Indigenous population. Why is he being so weird about it all? He has apologised, after all, for boycotting Rudd's apology to the Stolen Generation, saying he failed to grasp the significance of the 2008 apology, despite insisting those questioning the Indigenous voice are not hard-hearted. I mean, they are merely hard-headed, right? Leaving no room for a brain, or any courage, or an understanding of whose home this is. Though they do love to tell people that there is no place like home. Not in those words as such, more in a reminder of how good life back home is, with a quick, go back to where you came from. Even to Indigenous people who have lived here for 60,000 years. That's how much they love the prospect of home. But perhaps they're just hardcore evolution fans. And as Africa is the mother country to all of us, we all need to return to Africa. Pack your bags and tap your heels together, everyone. For all 8 billion of us, we're going home. So, given the intense scaremongering that we got for the gay marriage referendum, what fun new or old tactics are rearing their heads this time? Will The Voice lead to other things? Getting voices in Parliament? Something like, oh, what's next? Dogs getting a voice in Parliament? That's a classic argument. You remember that one? Or are we going to be scaremongering about the devil? Or some sort of witchcraft? Also, good classics. We love a good moral panic, don't we? So what do we got? Come on, what do we got? Let's have a look. Oh, fuck me. We have more rumours here than there were about COVID vaccines. They kept those to just a few nonsensical talking points. Here, we have too many. You can be confused about a few things, fine. But honestly, this is just too many things. It makes you guys look like real idiots. All right, let's go through some of these. So first up, let's see, what have we got here? Yes. All right, here we go. The referendum will be rigged by the AEC. Good stuff. Alrighty, rigged elections. That's a modern classic, right? We love a good rigged election. First of all, we have had no rigged elections for a really long time. It's sort of important that you know that. You know, of course, outside of the obvious ones like North Korea and Russia and China and Egypt, like your standard major dictators, okay? Oh, and don't forget America. They don't so much rig elections as they send a bunch of violent men in to overturn the results of a democratic election. I mean, only recently they've started trying it in their own country, and that one didn't go very well, but normally it does go very well for them, so I can understand why they tried it. Okay, what else have we got? Oh, this one's very interesting. Apparently, Australia's constitution has been invalid since 1973. Man, where did they come up with this stuff? Did you know this? Now, it's certainly news to me. apparently we've just been set adrift, constitutionalists since the early 70s. At least according to the Sovereign Citizen Movement, all right? Yeah, they're a very bored bunch, it seems. That bastion of trustworthy information. They argue that the Constitution is an illegal document and Australia is operating as a corporation. So just like swinging hard for six right here. And as due to the infallible logic here, it is claimed the proposed voice to parliament would be null and void if enshrined in the Australian Constitution, which doesn't exist. You guys might need some context here. I understand this is a bit of a confusing thing. So I gotcha. So it turns out the claims are linked to the passing of the Royal Style and Titles Act in 1973, which resulted from attempts by Gough Whitlam's government to update the formal title used by the then Queen in relation to Australia, okay? After a bit of back and forth, they finally settled on Queen Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, Queen of Australia and her other realms and territories, head of the Commonwealth. Later, they'd option in a couple of extra choices, some fun ones just, you know, to mix things up a little bit. We've got Delayer of Charles, Hoarder of the Stolen Goods, Avoider of Taxes, Protector of the Nonce Andrew, and Marrier of the Third Cousin. The Sovereign Citizens argue that because the Constitution specifically mentions the Queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland rather than the Queen of Australia, the country's founding document is invalid. Some also argue the new law changed the Constitution illegally, as there was no referendum which would be required to change the Constitution. Missing the irony that they are now trying to stand in the way of a referendum to update the Constitution, which they say is invalid anyway. So why do they even care, right? Why don't they just let us play make-believe with the rules that don't apply to them anyway? Doesn't make sense to me. Now, don't let the fact that the 1973 law was ordinary legislation and did in no way actually seek to amend the Constitution stop you from throwing off the yokes of the country that you live in, nor that the High Court had previously dismissed similar arguments. For example, in 1988, a High Court ruling made very clear every reference to the Queen in the Constitution needs to be read using a reference to the Queen of Australia. These are mere formalities that we will ignore. I mean, why try to improve something that doesn't exist, right? You don't see me pitching my idea for a new and improved super unicorn, though it would be great, and I spent a lot of time on it, and you'd really like it. But never mind, because we don't improve things, we only dismiss them, alright? So what else you got, voice deniers? What else you got? Apparently, voting in the voice referendum will be voluntary. This one's quite interesting, a little bit of a weird one, because I genuinely don't know what they're setting out to achieve with this. See, here's the thing. I think this is what muddies the waters. The same-sex marriage plebiscite was not compulsory, as it was a plebiscite. This is a referendum. It's completely compulsory, like all voting. Who are they trying to convince not to vote with this? Because the people who are voting yes are gonna do so whether it's mandatory or not, right? Because they want to improve other people's lives. Whereas the no voters, well, I don't know how dedicated they are to saying no, to be honest. And all you're gonna do is get them fined for not voting. So what's the end game here? Like, in a very similar vein, they are claiming that you're going to need to enroll separately to vote in the referendum. Again, who are you trying to convince not to participate? This feels like a reverse psyops from the Yes campaign, because if we can convince the No people that they need to do all this extra work, then they won't be bothered, especially if it's not compulsory. Wink, wink, wink. That's really what it feels like, right? And again, the yes people are going to vote regardless of how many extra steps, imaginary or not, that they have to go through. It does not matter how much extra work they have to do. These people are doing so with the power of righteous dignity, and they will not be stopped from telling their grandchildren that they voted yes on the referendum because they tried to help to do what was right before they send them to school in the domed safe space of the burning future hellscape that we used to call Earth. Of course, they're going to have to reckon with the fact that they couldn't save the planet from climate change, but at least that one time they did something good. Now, this is a common argument that I hear a lot, that apparently it's going to amount to a third chamber of parliament and therefore impact parliamentary sovereignty, a fundamental element of our constitutional system of government, as well as it will give First Nations people special rights. These are basically the same argument here. Essentially, they're saying that Indigenous people will get a special place in society above other people. And look, guys, I hate to be the one to point this out. Well, that's not true. I kind of like it. But for sake of argument, I hate to be the one to point this out. But if the Indigenous people were going to get power, real power, they would never allow it to go forward in the first place. The voice. This voice to parliament is literally just an advisory board. If you know anyone who is still unsure, tell them. It's just an advisory board. And if we have learned anything from the Robodebt Royal Commission's aftermath, it's that recommendations can be made all day and the government will probably just ignore them. Labor set up an advisory board on the effectiveness of JobSeeker. That advisory board recommended they raise the JobSeeker rate. And that was ignored. And then People's Champion Chief Justice Catherine Holmes recommended it again in her Royal Commission aftermath report. And it was ignored again. Governments are real good at ignoring advice. But at least we're trying. At least we're trying to create a thing that may possibly, potentially, have some positive impact on some people. But it's just an advisory board, guys. Here's an interesting one. It says Australians should be allowed to see all proposed legislation establishing the voice before voting in the referendum. Fuck me. We're getting real interested in politics all of a sudden. Well, I can't wait for these armchair politicians to start demanding all the information for every piece of legislation forthcoming, seeing how much they care now. This is an interesting one, as I do hope that they hold on to this passion for detail come the next election. They get the parties to lay out in great detail exactly how they plan on doing everything that they promised. It's going to be a long election campaign, but worth it to get rid of those empty promises that electoral campaigns are basically built on, right? So campaigns will become budget month, effectively. It'll really take some of the teeth out of the election campaigns. They won't be able to lie because these people will be paying close attention to detail and looking for all of the proposed legislation, exactly how it's going to be laid out. They need to know everything about it. And they will definitely, I mean definitely, hold them to it. So that's the death of the dirty election campaign for once and for all. Huzzah! Here's one. This one's a really interesting one. Apparently, these people think the voice is going to divide the nation. And if I'm honest with you guys, it kind of already has, but only because they are standing in the way of progress. If they just calm down and do a little research, then they'd understand that there's nothing to panic about. And this next one is kind of interesting, if I'm honest with you. They say it offends the notion of equality that underpins the Constitution and our democracy. Yes. That famously equitable document, the Australian Constitution. That same Constitution that constitutional law expert Professor Anne Twomey has explained, contains a little thing called Section 51, the initial intention of which was certainly racist, as it allowed the Commonwealth Parliament to make laws with respect to the people of any race or whom it deemed necessary to make special laws. And if you don't believe that, here is Edmund Barton in 1898 arguing that Section 51, subsection XXVI, was that 26, was necessary to enable the Commonwealth to regulate the affairs of the people of coloured or inferior races who are in the Commonwealth. That rule has changed since then. Instead, we just do it the slow way through institutional violence and oppression, mostly with cops and welfare policing at this point. And finally, though this isn't even all of the conspiracies, this is just the ones that we're covering in this story. Indigenous Australians are divided over the voice. Therefore, it shouldn't be supported. I mean, is this a joke? What kind of an argument is this? Australians are divided on who should be PM. Therefore, we should have no politicians. Australians are divided on which football team to follow. Therefore, no sports for us. We can't agree on anything. There has not been 100% support for anything in this country. Just on principle. Warren Mundine and Jacinda Price were going to be against it as their Liberal Party members, so their opinion is biased. I mean, Mundine has even at certain points made the argument that the government can't be trusted to fix disadvantage. And he'd know, as his government is really good at not helping anyone. They're like gold medal winning good at it, you know? In all honesty, one of the reasons some Indigenous people are against it, like, for example, Lydia Thorpe, is that it isn't treaty, right? They want it to go further. And that's among other things. Like, I'm really simplifying her argument here, just for the sake of speed. But as Australia is one of the only Commonwealth countries without treaty with its First Nations people, I agree. We need a treaty. But like anything, change is incremental. I have to assume that the Voice Committee will be constantly pushing for treaty. It's baby steps, guys. It's little steps. We've sort of got to get there in the best way that we can with the shitty system that we've got. And it's hard for me to make this argument as a white man against the Indigenous community. But if I'm honest with you guys, like 82%, so that's like 3 in 4 Indigenous people, are for the Voice. So if you're going to look at this one white man and say, I don't know what I'm talking about, roughly 3 in 4 Indigenous people are for The Voice, and that's who I'm listening to on this one. Because despite Lydia Thorpe's objections, which are more solid than most, I stand by the principle that you generally get an idea of how good a thing is to do or follow based on who's endorsing or disendorsing it. Which is why, if I'm honest, I'll likely never try cocaine. Sigmund Freud, huge cokehead. And that guy, all he talked about was wanting to fuck his own mum and how everyone was jealous of his dick. So when I found out that filmmaker, writer of my favourite play, The Pillow Man, and all-round champion of the people, Martin McDonagh, called the No Campaign right-wing swine for using a scene from his film Seven Psychopaths in an anti-Voice ad, I was instantly reassured in my choice to back The Voice. Which helped a lot when John Farnham lent You're the Voice to the Yes campaign. Now, don't get me wrong, John Farnham is fine. I enjoy some of his songs. He's just a dude, you know? Also, he hasn't done anything special outside of being good at his job. Plus, to be honest, the guy just doesn't know how to retire, right? And that's misleading to the people who paid good money to go to his last time concert, which was allegedly his last time, as the title implied, but was certainly not the last time. So that, I think that's his biggest controversy. And for a 74-year-old cis white man, the fact that the only controversies he's been involved in have been over the use of his song, The Voice, by people that he doesn't like, i.e. Reclaim Australia and the anti-COVID or vaccine protesters. And frankly, they are doing him a favour by disassociating with him, because that saves him the effort of doing it himself. This is a pretty impressive feat. I suspect Jacinda Price is just upset that nobody wanted to use any of her songs from her debut solo album, Dry River, where she was actually praised for being like a little bit like Tracy Chapman. Yeah, that's right. Jacinda Price released an album when she was young. She used to be part of a couple of hip-hop collectives, guys. You can look into it. Some of the songs are actually all right. I think this is why they keep cutting funding from the arts. Just a little side note. I do think this is why they keep cutting funding from the arts. They know that artists like Jacinta Price and Paul Fletcher, who don't manage to succeed as artists, may turn into Liberal Party members to get revenge on the arts. So if they can sort of downtrod some more folks, maybe get some young Indigenous artists who feel like it's all horrible, then they can shore up their numbers in the diversity categories that they struggle with traditionally. A few more women, a few more Indigenous people, a few more artistic types. Moving on now to strike news. It's strike time. There's no business like show business. No business at all while the writers and actors are on strike. Yes, it's time to fight corporate greed and meme the shit out of some speeches because Hollywood is on strike. As most of you would know, some 11,500 members of the WGA have been on strike against the AMPTP member companies for about 130 days. And the actors of SAG-AFTRA have reached roughly 67 days on strike, forming a kind of union of the oppressed. Actors who have spent years portraying the downtrodden are entering into their largest role research ever. So I imagine there's going to be some fun method acting coming out of this. Negotiations appear to be at a bit of a standstill as studios can't come to a reasonable compromise on requests from unions, particularly around minimum sizes of writing staff and replacing background actors with digital scans of actors who would not be paid. Seems studio heads have essentially declared human writers and actors are irrelevant after being impressed with the quality of an original idea written and expertly performed by human writers and actors. For those who missed it, Hollywood's AI proposal for actors includes taking scans of background actors for use not only in a single project, but any project in perpetuity. SAG-AFTRA leaders explained they proposed that our background performers should be able to be scanned, get one day's pay, and that their company should own that scan, their image, their likeness, and should be able to use it for the rest of eternity in any project that they want with no consent and no compensation. Yeah. Studio heads want to save money on writers and actors so that they can replace them with digital artists, allowing them to not only save money and time when finishing a film, but they also won't have to pay for digital artists to create original monsters anymore, as the new AI creations will spit out these janky background actors with their 20-fingered hands and their uncanny valley faces and arms generating arms in a human centipedal charade of human form. Truly an unrelatable, unwatchable multi-million dollar horror show filled with the bland writings of a computer pretending to be a witty and insightful observer of the human condition. Word on the street is that Charlie Brooker is looking to sue the major studios for stealing his ideas and trying to build their reality around them. But that's just what I heard. When actors joined the writers in a solidarity strike, studio heads were surprised that the actors would join the writers in solidarity, as the studio heads would never support another human being. Reminding reporters of the statements they let go to the press that the intention of the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers in the long haul was with plans to let the Writers Guild of America bleed out before resuming negotiations. One unidentified source saying, the end game is to allow things to drag on until union members start losing their apartments and losing their houses. Studio heads did offer some helpful advice in response to all this, saying, actors, writers struggling to pay their rent right now should have just gotten jobs as studio heads instead, as they pay really well. Not sure if they've heard, but they're really profitable over on this side of the spectrum. One of the major sticking points for the WGA is, of course, the introduction of AI writers for first drafts of scripts, and they would bring a smaller team of writers in to do punch-up and drafting on the scripts written by the AI, going so far as to let slip that they're not planning to develop any new or original scripts anymore, just saying that they had created enough original content for AI to just rearrange existing scripts and franchises in slightly different ways for the rest of time. Disney head Bob Iger even let slip the future of Disney films, which will consist of just increasingly CGI remakes of old films, so that writers and actors will officially become redundant. They've gotten pretty close. I mean, they still have to pay actors to speak, and frankly, that's still too much interaction with actors for his liking. And in a sense, I get it. There are some real pretentious artists out there. I've done plays with people who have had all sorts of stupid rituals like lucky underpants, and that shit wears real thin after a week of shows. But I wouldn't wish for them to lose their home and starve in the street for insisting that the underpants are in fact lucky. Who knows? Maybe they are. I never ended up punching them in the face, which was pretty lucky for them. What might stop them in their stampeding rush to kill all humans faster than Bender in season 1 of Futurama is this. See, it turns out, at least for now, AI generated art is not copyrightable. Hello, money. My best friend and my worst enemy. We meet again at another crossroads of desire and reality. If we keep meeting like this, people will think that we are in love. So it turns out a federal court ruled on August 18th that AI-generated artwork cannot be copyrighted on the grounds that copyright law only extends to human beings. Well, 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 seems human beings are still useful after all, eh, Bob? Even if it is just as pegs to stop your tentpole blockbuster from flying away from you, we still have our use. The ruling came after the US Court Copyright Office two times, refused a copyright to plaintiff Stephen Thaler for an image generated by the Creativity Machine algorithm, a program that he himself created. And this is nice because even when Disney inevitably makes their own version of Midjourney that uses the volume to generate completely flat TV shows devoid of new ideas, absent of actors, sans scripts written by people, and vacant of value for anyone who isn't an executive. So basically, reality TV, right? That's basically just what they want at this point. Oh no, because there's too many humans in reality TV. So it'll be reality TV with AI-generated humans. Okay, that sounds like a horrible nightmare. Meanwhile, other entities like the Grammys have sided with the federal court on this one, saying only human musicians are eligible to win awards. Actually making, insert current hated musician in this space, an update when we change our minds to remain relevant, ineligible for lacking that most human of components, a soul. And finally, we're going to end the show this week with climate news. Climate change, our newest and greatest foe. Climate change, to me, proves why we made up that rumor about frogs boiling to death in water if we do it slow enough. You remember that rumor? something that's completely not true, but gives us comfort as we are slowly boiling ourselves to death, yet taking no action to do anything about it or hop out of the pot. We are the frogs. Turns out we were the frogs all along. You don't believe me? Well, after Australia's warmest winter on record, the government has gone ahead and approved more coal mining. That's right. With global heating at least partly contributing to above average maximum temperatures across the entire country, and July being the hottest month on record ever in recorded history. Take that, all of recorded history, you bloated, ever-growing sack of shit. You think you're better than us? We're number one, baby. We're number one. We did it. Now, you'll likely never hear that the former New South Wales Fire Chief Greg Mullins has accused the Albanese government of an incomprehensible decision to continue approving new coal mines despite accepting global heating is adding to bushfire risk. And it does seem incomprehensible, given their constant rhetoric on the need for climate action, on the coalition's inaction, on making change, on their talk about the Barrier Reef dying, on scolding Scott Morrison for taking a holiday during a bushfire, and of course, the EV car debate that formed a major part of their failed 2019 political campaign. But no, they're fine. Don't even think about it. Mullins even likened Australia's continued export of fossil fuels to selling drugs. A dangerous comparison because we as a species, especially men, tend to idolise the wrong characters in a TV show, like notorious drug dealer Walter White, for example. And I'm not sure if you've been following politics. This is kind of a political deep cut, but stay with me. Most politicians in Australia are men. I know, I was shocked too. Could go poorly for us having these guys think that they carry the unearned swagger of a drug dealer. I mean, you know Bryan Cranston, Albo, let's put it that way. The International Monetary Fund recently calculated fossil fuels cost the Australian budget $65 billion a year. Now, most of the cost, around $55.6 billion, is indirect subsidies for failing to recoup the environment and health costs from polluters. And we can only expect this to go up, as climate scientists and bushfire experts have warned the country faces an elevated risk of bushfires this spring and summer compared with the past 3 wet years. See, we've been cultivating all this deliciously flammable material as La Niña events resulted in very little preventative burning being able to be done, and prolific growth of vegetation has added fire fuel across the landscape. We're heading into what we can call the hot bush summer. A very hot bush summer. A smouldering hot bush summer. So we simply got to get on top of it, right? That's really all we've got to do. I mean, no need to panic. We've just got to, you know, to stop us from having a deadly and smoky summer full of poor air quality. We'll just get it out of the way now. So stop complaining, Sydney. Get that life-threatening air pollution out of the way early this year. A little smoke over the CBD and the eastern suburbs, and another day of poor air quality due to fire hazard reduction burns in September are simply the price that you have to pay for this lifestyle that you want to embrace. The endless enjoyment of record-breaking heat in the summer months. You sweet summer city, you. You don't even know the troubles ahead of you. You want a beautiful, carefree summer, do you? Well, you need to compromise on your spring. You can't have a beautiful, Insta-worthy summer without a smoky, life-threatening spring. It's 2023. Get with the program. This is how it works now. We are fighting fire with fire, quite literally. We here at the Bearer of Weird News are hearing early reports of anti-maskers taking to the streets in a defiant refusal of self-preservation, rushing to breathe in as much of that beautiful smoke as possible before the fascist nature tries to make them wear masks or go indoors. Sydneysiders, however, are furious. The only reason to be in Sydney has been covered by life-threatening smoke. Some even going so far to say, look, I'm happy to die as long as I get to see that beautiful harbour one more time. And they best get that burning in fast, as coal mine expansions and developments approved in Australia so far this year are expected to add nearly 150 million tonnes of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere over their lifetimes. Well, it's no wonder David Pocock set to impose that duty of care over the Australian government for climate harm. A proposal that would force the government to consider the health and well-being of young people. Remember, we talked about it earlier. In an interesting choice, David, a very interesting choice. Attempting to hold the unaccountable accountable using the system that they completely control? Very bold. Very bold. I'd even go so far as to say brave. Very brave. Brave is the word that we use when we mean well-intended but ultimately meaningless, right? Yes, that's the word, right? Yes, very brave, Pocock. Now, look, we have tried this before, and look, to a degree, we were successful. A group of kids took the former Federal Environment Minister, Sussan Ley, to court to obtain a duty of care towards future generations. And the government had the audacity to appeal that decision, to argue that, in fact, they didn't have a duty of care to protect young people from the climate crisis when assessing fossil fuel developments. And that was successfully appealed.
You know, young people, young Australians, Anjali Sharma and seven others, took the then environments to court, arguing that the government did have a duty of care to them. And they won that case. The government then appealed, and I remember at the time just being so angry to see an Australian government publicly arguing that they don't have a duty of care to young people. If we're not in here to look after young people, I don't know what we're here for.
It's corporations, David. It's corporations. You know this. Don't pretend like you don't know this. We just need to make it the investment in renewable energy a more appealing investment than coal. Now, you might think I'm being hyperbolic, but according to predictions, every state has a more than 50% chance of recording temperatures in the highest 20% on record, and a warmer climate is set to increase the risk of extreme weather events, which in most of Australia generally means bushfires. So, clearly, Labor has a plan, right? Right, Labor? You got a plan for this, don't you? I have to assume that Labor's plan is twofold. Continue to build the coal mines until we cook the planet enough that our sunscreen market becomes powerful enough to replace the gap in the economy that divesting from coal will make. Because we have some of the best sunscreen in the world, let's be honest. We do need it. As the sun here is particularly fucked and only getting worse as we fail to address the climate change. Then part two, the long game investment. Seems that we are too far down the rabbit hole to go back on this whole capitalism running the economy thing, and Labor realizes that we can't be brought back without something extreme happening. So they are just trying to burn it all down. Maybe speed it along a little by building a few more coal mines. Then we can come all the way around and build a new world on the ashes of the old one. One driven by the passions and trauma of Gen Z and Gen Alpha, who lived the last fiery days of capitalism, and will build the new world on principles of socialism and looking after each other. Or, alternatively, on the principles of ensuring you promptly cook the human meat before you eat it, and never eat the brain, or possibly the liver, so that you won't get kuru. Just another top tip for surviving the wasteland apocalypse. And for more top tips like this, you can check out my secret survivalist channel, Mad Matt. And we've come to the end of the episode. Thanks so much, those of you who made it all the way through. If you did enjoy it, Please share it around, like it on whatever channel that you're on, give it a little rating, and send it to whoever you think will enjoy it. I'd really appreciate those things. If you can donate to the Patreon, I'd really appreciate that too. It really helps keep not only this going, but it allows me to sort of go on tour a little bit more and get around and get these shows out and about. Speaking of which, I do still think the best way to support the show is to come out to the live show. So if you've enjoyed any of the content of this kind of show and want to hear similar things, come out to my live show, Wedge Against the Machine. I'll be in various places. Like I said, I'm in Sydney, I'll be in Wynnum, and I'll be touring around a lot of Australia in 2024. But until then, thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy yourselves, and bye. See you next time. Bye-bye.